This podcast was recorded Thursday, May 26th at 11:07 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like there won't be any more mass shootings in American schools or supermarkets or churches.
We can always hope. Let's talk politics.
This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those Snollygosters who make everything political until they find themselves opposite public opinion. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Yep, 85% of Americans support new laws to try to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people. But we should not point that out after a gunman kills 19 little kids and two teachers.
You know, we try to have a little fun and be irreverent on this podcast, but it's not really going to happen this week. We like to say that the massacre at the Uvalde, Texas elementary school was stunning. It was unimaginable, just unthinkable. It was not. It was predictable.
Nope. Here's why. As horrific as it was only the second most deadly mass shooting at an elementary school in American history. Of course, the worst was at Sandy Hook in 2012.
Yeah, the sort of the natural reaction is to just be in shock when something like this happens, you know, when 19 children are massacred inside of an elementary school. And it is shocking, and it should never not be shocking. It should always be appalling and just sickening. And it is, but as we say, it's not unpredictable. It has happened, and it's disgusting to say, but it's going to happen again.
You have to think it's going to happen. There's no indication, there's no evidence that's going to keep this from happening again, whatever the cause is. And it's always the same pattern. You have the initial tragedy, horrific occurrence, you know, people praying and thinking of the families, praying for the victims, calls for increased gun control. Gun rights activists say, no, we need more mental health treatment and we need better family structure. And we need to arm teachers or others to try to prevent this. And then the issue fades away after about 3 weeks.
Yeah, public health experts are pretty much in near universal agreement, as Corey Turner from NPR reported on Thursday morning, that arming teachers and arming school staff is not the answer, that it's much more likely to cause a problem than it is to solve any problem. The chances of an armed good guy stopping an attacker with an AR-15 or an AK-57 is just...
Well, what happens after one of these shootings, we haven't not done the reporting yet, but we probably will, you'll see gun sales will increase because people who are gun rights and gun enthusiasts fear that there will be new laws.
There'll be an ammunition shortage.
Yeah, there'll be new laws to limit gun ownership, which doesn't happen. It never happens. But it's a marketing effort. You know, even if it's a quiet marketing effort on the part of gun manufacturers and gun retailers, and, you know, a fear of gun owners. But the law is going the opposite direction. You know, I have to give credit to Laura Bischoff at the Columbus Dispatch. She had a nice article not too long ago where she talked about all of the gun changes in Ohio. So here is what Ohio has done with gun laws since the Sandy Hook massacre, okay, in 2012. The state first reduced the number of training hours needed for concealed carry permits. Then it loosened regulations on automatic weapons that fire 31 or more rounds without reloading. It allowed hidden gun permits who carry guns to carry them in daycare centers and college campuses. The state enacted a Stand Your Ground law that removed the requirement that people first try to retreat before using deadly force in public places. And most recently, the state eliminated the training requirements and the special background checks needed to get a hidden gun permit.
Yeah, that one still has not even taken effect. It was so recent.
Yeah.
And of course, all this happened around the 2019 mass shooting in Dayton. Cities around Ohio report spikes in gun deaths. In Columbus, we've seen record homicides in recent years. After the Dayton mass shooting, Governor DeWine tried to, quote, do something, and nothing happened. It was, the proposal could not gain any real traction in the Ohio legislature. Matt Dolan, who just made a failed run for U.S. Senate, proposed it in the Ohio Senate, and nothing happened.
Yeah. I mean, all of the recent school shootings have been done by gunmen around 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And a proposal to limit gun ownership to those 21 and over. Same as, you know, the age you can drink, the same as the age where in most states you can go to the casino and gamble. you can own a gun at 18. That is not going to go anywhere.
No, because gun rights advocates will say it violates the Second Amendment. It infringes on on law-abiding citizens' ability to own guns.
Yeah, and they argue that we need more mental health treatment, which is true. We need more violence prevention programs, which we do, because most of the gun deaths do not happen in these horrific massacres.
Right, they happen with pistols.
You know, every other day, you know, at a city park or on a city street. And frankly, most gun deaths are suicides that we don't hear anything about until the statistics come out.
It's not a mental health issue because we are not an outlier when it comes to mental health. Mental health is an issue that affects every country, every state in the world. The U.S. has about twice as high number of gun ownership per capita as the second close country in the second neck, the second country in the world. It appears to be a gun issue. It's not a every piece of data says that it's not a mental health issue. It's a gun issue.
Yeah, it's an access to deadly weapons. And that suicide experts will say that suicide is an impulsive. It's not. It's something that builds. Depression is a real thing, but the actual act of suicide is something that is like impulsive right then and there. And if you can get the person help, if you can get them to call a suicide hotline or get them counseling right then and there, you can talk the person down.
That's the reason a lot of broadcasters now give the suicide hotline number whenever they do any reporting on suicide, because there's data and there's evidence that it can help.
Yeah, but if there's a gun right there on the nightstand, that's what happens.
Yeah, NPR this week interviewed a woman of a person who was killed in the Aurora, Colorado, the movie theater shooting, the Batman movie theater shooting in Aurora, and she specifically said she was counseling. They interviewed her when she was in Buffalo and she was about to head to Texas, because that's what she does now. She drives around and helps these people, and she advised them not to have a gun around, because if she had a gun around, she would have taken her own life in the wake of her child's death.
Yeah. So the big question is, will it be different this time? It seems like every time now that the howls do get louder. We saw Beto O'Rourke make whether it was a publicity stunt or a true act of trying to hold the Governor Abbott in Texas accountable. He stormed his news conference and yelled at him and got kicked out. The howls seem to be louder, but does it change the dynamic?
No, I mean, I think Sandy Hook was so appalling. So beyond the pale, 26 children slaughtered, preschool students, 26 of them just absolutely massacred, and nothing substantial happened. Mm-hmm. And I hate to sound so fatalist, but I just don't think anything is going to happen as long as there's a filibuster in the Senate, as long as there's not complete one-party control by the Democrats, there's not going to be any real gun control issues that pass, because it's viewed as such a non-starter for Republicans. Rob Portman, for instance, has taken $3 million from the NRA. You like to think he's not completely beholden to his donors, but what are the chances of Rob Portman voting for any real gun control?
No, and the NRA is bankrupt, and they have lessened their giving because they're having money problems and other issues regarding misuse of funds and controversies there. But they're having their convention this weekend in Houston, and we don't know if Governor Abbott from Texas is going to speak. He was scheduled. Ted Cruz was scheduled to speak. I don't know what his plans are. Got former President Trump still going to speak.
Guns will not be allowed.
Yeah.
So, but you would think guns make everyone safer.
I know. Yeah, it's ultimately up to the voters. It really is. And this, like the abortion issue, you wonder if this is the galvanizing event that will cause people to vote that way. Like you said, 85 to 90% of the American public, even like 85% of gun owners, support mandatory background checks for everybody, even if among private sales at gun shows. They support red flag laws that say if someone's dangerous, you should be able to take their gun away from them. But there's still no action on the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and I grew up in a hunting culture. I grew up in a rural part of Central Ohio in Union County, where the first week of deer season, the first week of December during deer season, most people take off work, or a lot of people take off work. Kids take off a week of school to go deer hunting. It's a cultural thing. Guns were a part of my life as a child. But at a certain point, you have to look at the data and see that ubiquitous gun ownership and gun violence go hand in hand. It doesn't mean that everyone with a gun is bad. It just means that the data show that this tidal wave of guns that are in America, there's more guns than people. It's problematic.
Yeah, there has to be middle ground. There has to be a solution, because what we're doing right now, it ain't working.
It is not. We'll be right back.
Support for WOSU podcasts comes from listeners. You can give at WOSU.org. Thank you for supporting digital content from WOSU Public Media.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Ohio's redistricting debate could end this weekend.
You mean we've reached a compromise? We have legislative maps that everyone can live with?
No, a federal court may just impose what it calls the best of a bunch of rotten apples, I guess you would say.
That's right. The Ohio Supreme Court this week, for a fifth time, rejected state legislative district maps submitted by the Ohio Redistricting Commission. No surprise there, because the court had already rejected these maps in round three.
That's right. They were very, very slightly tweaked from the third version. This is a map a federal court says it is ready to impose still for this cycle if the Supreme Court and the Republican-led Redistricting Commission cannot reach a compromise by Friday. So the commission just resubmitted the map that was previously ruled unconstitutional and now hopes that the federal court does not change its mind.
For those having trouble keeping track,
like myself,
here's what these maps look like. They create 54 Republican and 45 Democratic leaning House seats, along with 18 Republican and 15 Democratic Senate seats. That is a proportional reflection of Ohio's voting preference, which splits about 54% Republican and 46% Democrat.
It is, but the Supreme Court invalidated the maps for unduly favoring the GOP because a disproportionate amount of those Democratic seats, if you will, I'm doing quotation marks, Democratic seats, 16 in the House and 6 in the Senate, are toss-up districts. So it looks like those those are the maps that we will use in the August primary, even though a very slight Republican wave would turn Ohio completely red, even with all these, quote, Democratic districts. And again, Saturday is the federal court's deadline for just imposing the new map.
Maureen O'Connor writes that the Republican majority members of the Redistricting Commission ignored the rulings of this state's highest court and the mandates of Ohio's Constitution. She says voters should create an independent commission to draw these maps.
Yes, she also called it a shocking rebuke of the rule of law. Justice Sharon Kennedy blamed O'Connor and the three Democrats on the Supreme Court for the stalemate, writing that the court hijacked the redistricting process and saying the people of Ohio need look no further than this court for the sole cause of the debacle of the missing primary.
Yeah, I wonder what those deliberation sessions are like. So the map, if it gets approved by the federal court, is good only for this cycle. Lawmakers, the Redistricting Commission, must come up with a new map for the 2024 election.
The Supreme Court basically called the Republican members of the commission contemptible, but could not hold them in contempt.
Yeah, that's what we're waiting for. We're waiting to see if the court would hold those members of the commission in contempt of court, and they did not cross that line. They could have, but there are a lot of people who said that would, you know, cross the line between separation of powers, and the court did not go that far, which is not a surprise, but may have forced the issue had they done that.
The separation of powers and checks and balances are sort of almost not mutually exclusive, but they are a little contradictory. And how does government work if you don't have the branches checking each other?
Yeah, I mean, you could say that if the Supreme Court were to hold the executive branch, the governor, the secretary of state, in contempt, that would be crossing the line separating the two powers or branches of government. But how is it the one branch or two branches, legislative and executive, can just thumb their nose at the Supreme Court and not do what they've ordered them to do? Is that not the same thing? That's what we would have been hearing had they had this gone to court.
To a layman, they seem to literally be in contempt of court. To a layperson who's not terribly concerned with the separation of powers in this case, the Supreme Court ordered them to do so. They were interpreting the changes to the Ohio Constitution that voters overwhelmingly passed, and they said that this did not meet them, and they ordered the Redistricting Commission to make a new map, and the Redistricting Commission did not.
I think technically there were slight little changes where they said they probably could say, look, we gave you a new map. if you don't like it, that's your decision. We'll just keep giving you maps until, you know.
Boy, it is just, they're just giving them the middle finger. It is just, there's no effort here to draw any kind of fair map.
I wonder what happens now, because you ask supporters of this plan that we have now, the folks who helped negotiate the system we have now, are you going to go back out there and collect
signatures? Jen Miller from the League of Women Voters.
Yeah, Herb Asher and Sam Gresham, folks who work for Common Cause, and Herb Asher, a longtime OSU political scientist who has worked on ballot reform issues in the past. They all say, let's wait and see how this one works out. So do they wait till 2024 to see if they get the maps that are better? I don't know.
Why would the maps be any better?
Well, the Supreme Court could be different. Both Jennifer Bruner and Sharon Kennedy, sitting justices, are going for the chief justice job. There are justices like Pat DeWine who are on the ballot, and a lot of people think that because of Justice DeWine's last name, he could be vulnerable in an election because a lot of Republicans are upset with Governor DeWine. So the makeup of the court could be different. It could actually skew more Republican, which would solve the problem as far as the Republicans on the Redistricting Commission are concerned. And the congressional map is still going to get reviewed. They sort of put that off for a cycle, the voting rights groups.
People still just don't care about this enough. I mean, they pass these reforms overwhelmingly. So it is an issue that resonates at least when it's on the ballot. But like as a coffee table issue, it just doesn't hit home, I don't think.
Yeah, I think the only way is to do a truly independent commission. If they could get that passed, a truly independent, not the one like in New York where the Democrats run the show there.
Well, the one in Michigan's had problems too.
Yeah. Well, there's always going to be challenges, but the one in New York.
There's always going to be politics involved somehow.
The independent commission could be overridden by lawmakers. Then you're not in, it's not independent.
Anyway, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment. We give that to the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. We thought about giving it to Lieutenant Governor John Husted for accepting a paid board position at an Ohio community bank. While unusual, we're not sure if it's really shrewd. We'll discuss that in a future episode.
Yeah, so instead, we'll give it to the Ohio politicians like former Governor John Kasich and U.S. Senate candidate and current Congressman Tim Ryan for proudly pointing out that they are on a list of some 900 Americans whom the Russian government has prohibited from entering Russia. Tim Ryan even thanked Russia for recognizing his support of Ukraine.
Some other people on that list: every congressman from the state of Ohio, John McCain, who is dead, Harry Reid, also dead, both obviously cannot travel to Russia, and because they're dead. So not exactly a real honor here for John Kasich.
Yeah, he was trying to raise money off it, though. It was in a fundraising email.
Yep, I got the email, too, and it's good PR, I guess. It makes you look tough, makes you look, Putin is bad, I'm anti-Putin, Putin doesn't like me.
But Donald Trump is not on the list. I'm not sure if J.D. Vance is or not. I tried to find out if J.D. Vance is on the list, and I don't know.
Well, either way.
It could be a campaign issue in his race with Tim Ryan if he's not on the list.
John Kasich for trumpeting your do-not-fly-to-Russia status, while it also includes about 900 other people. You are our Snollygoster.
And could tie with Tim Ryan. Tim Ryan, too.
Yeah, Tim Ryan, you're right. If you have suggestions for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, you can email us at snollygoster@wosu.org. As always, be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts. And as always, tell your friends about us. Until next week, for our audio producer, Eric French, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.